ready, Quinnies? Because yes. I have a song for sure. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, Quinny, okay, you start, okay. Quinny.
Straight up evil.
Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily
Thou
fluid.
Thou shalt kill all of your
everybody's had a dog, fish, a tampon, out of the garbage. It ain't right
to Bible you, pages, but you can pretend like you will. A dog.
Wow.
Can't trust your neighbor, you can't trust your friends, you can't trust your dog except for your dog.
The dog, Quinny.
No, you can't trust your dog.
God.
That's probably about it.
Oh my God, Quinny, that's incredible. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie, she's the redhead.
Chalo.
And we have Carly, she's the blonde.
Hiya.
Here we are. Welcome back, Quinny's, to our two-part series on Maura Murray. And if you have not listened to part one, roll it back, check that out before listening to tonight's episode, because you need the foundation to keep up with us, because
we're going deep tonight, we're going into all the places,
checking out all the things. And so tonight we're going to talk about the most popular theories of the case, why this case has endured for so long, and what we think may have happened to Maura Murray. We're going to get into our individual thoughts as well, but before we get started, we need to address just a couple of the rumors that are popular in this case, because they kind of come into play during tonight's episode. They're not theories about what happened to her, but they're just more stuff to mix in to the whole mess of it. First, we got to talk about Hossein Baghdadi. Is that how you say his name?
I think so.
He is, of course, depending on who you ask, one of Maura's track coaches or a teacher at UMass Amherst. He went by Hoss.
Yeah, I didn't know about this. I didn't know about this part, Quinny. This is new news to me.
Well,
I didn't know about
this. It doesn't really say anything about how she disappeared or what the circumstances are. It's just another thing that people throw around as evidence of, I don't know, something. I don't know.
100.
So he's either a track coach or a teacher at UMass Amherst. We don't know. It could be both. But he has come forward and said that he was in a sexual relationship with Maura Murray while she was a student at Amherst. And he was clearly in a position of power or supervisory authority. And that's just not cool. I'm not cool with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of shows coming out right now too of these, of this happening. These kids having sexual relations with their teachers. Mm-hmm. It's apparently a big thing.
And he says that, you know, they were in a relationship, sexual relationship, when she was with her boyfriend, Billy, when they were on a break, all of the things. He said that Maura openly talked about running away, specifically mentioned running away to Mexico. Listen, we talked about this with Brianna Maitland too. Like, you say a lot of shit when you're 21 and you're like, I just want to go live in Ecuador. And like, you know, like you just say shit.
And for some reason, him saying that to the detectives, like, oh, well, when we had private conversations, she was always dropping hints that she planned on leaving or just disappearing. That makes me believe not a word that he says.
Yeah.
I don't even necessarily believe there wasn't necessarily an affair.
Yeah, he's the only person who can say that that even happened.
Exactly.
People get crazy around these things. They try to insert themselves.
Right. Exactly. They want to wedge themselves. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. A lot of people do like to wedge themselves into the case. Mm-hmm. But I think that you can kind of, I don't want to say we can always see right through them, but I just think that there's a difference between a lot of these witnesses in their truth telling. And I just kind of don't fully believe him. I mean, I'm not saying that it isn't true, because like Quinny said, like,
totally, like, we know there's an infidelity situation.
Teenagers at that age, they have a lot of secrets, and they do a lot of things their parents don't know about, some of their friends don't know about. Like, they go and do things that people don't know about.
What I don't like about that whole thread of possibility is, first of all, we only have his story, so don't love that. But people are taking it and running with it. And then they're saying, oh, well, they had an affair, blah, 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 blah. She was with Billy. Billy got mad, whatever. Or, oh, well, she's going to be meeting Haas at a cabin in New Hampshire somewhere that was like owned by like, you know, the UMass track, whatever, you know, whatever.
Yes, the Outing Club. The Outing Club.
Thank you. Yes. If that were true, how come she's also equally searching places in Vermont?
Mm-hmm. She's actively looking for lodging, no doubt about it.
Right. Right. And not in just one space. Like she's seemingly undecided.
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like if she's like setting up, she's gonna meet him at the thing, at the cabin that the Outing Club like is, you know, charge of, then what is Vermont? What's the point of that even?
It just comes down to, we don't know.
Exactly.
We do not know. This is what this man says. The cabin that Carly mentioned, the Outing Club cabin, that's part of the UMass network, that was supposedly close to where Maura crashed. We don't know how close. We don't know if that's true. It's just, once we get into theories, you got to know that this coach came, or teacher came forward and said, I was sleeping with Maura Murray. We also need to address bulimia, which Carly brought up in the first episode. So we have several rumors that Maura Murray had an eating disorder, and a couple different people say that it was specifically bulimia. Megan Sawyer, who's her former roommate at West Point, told James Renner, who we will definitely be talking about tonight, said that Maura was bulimic, said, quote, she had issues with bulimia.
Yep.
Now, of course, so bulimia nervosa, emotional disorder. It's a distortion of the body image, obsessive desire to lose weight, in which bouts of extreme overeating are followed by depression and self-induced vomiting, purging, and fasting. Now, we know that Maura was ordering a lot of pizza. And this is when Carly also mentioned, is it possible that she was eating these huge meals and then throwing them up as part of the eating disorder? We really don't know.
Yeah. So there was, I don't know who said it, because again, these are all like rumors and people talking to people, but
one of her sisters, right?
One of the sisters like kind of touches on it, but more so the fact like, let's not, like, who would want that to be like one of the things you're most known for, like when you're not here to defend yourself, which I completely understand and completely get. But unfortunately, it is a common, again, like a common thing brought up in this particular case, because we don't know anything about anything, and everything could mean something.
Any of it could be significant. Anything we don't know.
Right. So like, obviously the pizza, but then there also was a rumor that maybe like the roommate or whatever stated like she would constantly eat pickles, Twizzlers, and Diet Coke, because pickles, very low calorie, and people, you know, people love them for some reason.
I love them too.
Maybe like a little gherkin once in a while, fine, but like,
Carly's too British for pickles.
I think I am.
Carly's like, this is too briny.
Meanwhile, my husband is like making his own in the fridge, like
delicious.
Love it.
I can't. Anyway, so, but also there's like a lot of sodium involved with pickles. Like your blood pressure stays up, so you're not going to faint from lack of eating.
Right. And they have potassium in them as well.
Potassium. And then like the Diet Coke, like soda helps you feel full just because of like the carbonation keeps you going with the caffeine, but like the diet half of it, you're not going to get too many calories. But the whole point of bulimia versus anorexia is that like normally bulimics don't necessarily count calories constantly. Is she purging by exercising? Is she purging by vomiting? Like, who knows? Who cares? Whatever. But then they're bringing in that into the equation, the alcohol. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the alcohol that's specifically involved the day that she went missing, like all high calorie content, like it's all high calorie stuff. You're taking completely empty calories. Are you going to purge more? Are you going to like go crazy and have a good time and party and then go into a deeply depressive state and like want to disappear or possibly commit suicide or what have you? Or are you eating the pickles and the Twizzlers allegedly to make up for the fact that you know you're going to have all these high calorie alcoholic drinks later? It's just a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't know if I know, you know, care, you know, about if she was dealing with that, I feel for her and I hope that she would have gotten help for it.
Right.
But honestly, like, do I think it has any actual bearing on the case? No, I don't.
No, well, I don't. Or
if it's major, I don't know that it's that major, like, because I don't know, like, I think people like can stress eat.
Oh yeah.
You know, and like, it's
yeah,
just
with, like, I bought the Halloween size bag of M&Ms at CVS the other day, like, and they are just for me. Sure. Like, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
But no, I just feel like we also can't discount the fact that people say horrible shit about people who take care of themselves. And I'm not suggesting that Maura Murray was fantastic at taking care of herself. She had two car accidents in 2 days.
Right.
But she was super athletic.
Yes.
And clearly very talented runner and like very driven athlete.
Right.
Yeah. Like I watched also, that footage of Serena Williams of the guy being like, so are you surprised that you're performing at this level at your age? He says to Serena fucking Williams.
Are you actually kidding me?
I'm like, you're lucky that she didn't knock you out. Like truly.
With her tennis racket.
Exactly. I would have paid to see her smack him off the head with the tennis racket.
Like who asked that question? Literally. But I do think that maybe it comes from a place of like, Carly, you can relate. You were a super skinny teenage girl. Mm-hmm. People being like, where do you put it? I don't understand.
Oh my God, you're like a stick in your ear. Yeah. Oh my God.
And then, she disappears and people are like, well, you know, I always thought that she was, you know, and it's like, I don't know about that shit.
When they become a victim, it's like they find every single thing that is wrong with that person.
I don't like
this person does this. This person does this. Oh, well, they totally did drugs and they like partook in drugs.
Yes.
Oh,
well, we saw this totally with Brianna Maitland too.
Exactly.
It's like, no.
It's like, leave the victim alone. Exactly. Not only that, it's like, leave the victim alone. How about you give some information that's actually useful?
That's useful in any way.
How about you just, as I like to say very often, like, why don't you just shut up? Like, just shut up.
Why don't you just shut up? Shut it.
So, yeah.
So if you are, you know, someone who needs help or know someone who needs help with an eating disorder, you can call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 1-800-931-2237.
Beautiful. Thank you, Carly. Yes. That's great. So we're going to start diving into theories here, Quinnies, and we're going to start with Carly getting into a very popular theory. Theory number one, she was pregnant.
Okay. Is there a possibility? Yes. Could you literally say that about any woman of childbearing age at any time, in any place, in any situation? Yes. Also. So 100. I don't love it, but okay. So some speculate that she was expecting a child. Is it Billy's? Is it allegedly maybe the track coach? Haas? We don't, nobody knows. Is there a baby at all? We don't know. But the reason people stick on this so much is because apparently Maura searched on Google around the time of her disappearance, quote, effects of alcohol on unborn fetus. This is what everyone quotes as what she searched, but police have not actually released the exact terms.
Of course they did.
Her Google search.
Of course not.
But they alluded that they found similar stuff on her computer history. So like,
we don't know anything. Yeah.
No. Okay? And her sister is an alcoholic.
Bullshit.
Right. Admitted alcoholic. So like, you don't know if she could be looking up
her or her friend or like anybody.
Really what I lean towards.
Yeah. And she has more than one sister too. And they're Catholic and a lot of alcohol runs through Catholic families. And there's no offense to that. It's just.
No, not at all. But she's going to parties. Is one of her friends possibly not knowing if she's pregnant or not? Is someone she just happens to know that goes to a lot of the same parties as her.
Right.
And she's just trying to figure out, like, is this something we all really need to be worried about and try to intervene or not? That's what I lean towards, especially given the fact that she literally brings her birth control pills on this drive.
I feel like that fact alone. Okay. Why are we talking about this?
Exactly.
Why are we talking about this?
Exactly. There's absolutely no reason for her to bring them.
It's just, this is just one that people are always like, well, she was pregnant and she was running for what, to whom? Like, it's always prompted as like, this is why she was on the road. This is why she disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a theory.
I'm going to give that a big thumbs down. Quinnies.
I'm going to give it a thumbs down.
Big thumbs down.
Big thumbs down. Yep. All right. Katie's getting into theory number two. She's living in Canada.
Yes.
I struggle.
This is a hard one. Maura's disappearance was also actually on the topic of a nonfiction thriller that was called True Crime Addict, How I Lost Myself in the Mysterious Disappearance of Maura Murray. Okay. And it is by the author and journalist known as James Renner.
I don't know if he still does. I'll have to double check, but he did follow us on Twitter.
Stop James Renner?
Yeah, when we like at least a year ago.
No. All right. Well, we better be careful because I have mixed feelings.
We all have mixed feelings.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the book, James Renner actually suggests the theory that she had traveled to New Hampshire with a tandem driver and that she may have disappeared willingly and actually started a new life elsewhere, possibly in Canada, that she had fears her pending credit card fraud case would eventually catch up to her and that it would prevent her from being hired as a nurse. And so that she like gave up on her career basically and just decided to move to Canada and start another life. His theory also continues that it's less likely she was murdered by someone that she knew. Fred Sr., Maura's dad, as well as other immediate family, completely deny these claims. Fred Murray Sr. believes and still believes to this day that she has passed away and was actually abducted on the day that she went missing. Now, James Renner has been obsessed with this case and he has remained obsessed with it. And if you actually go, so he has a bunch of websites, articles about him, so on and so forth, right? That have this link to his website. And I was telling Quinny about this during the first episode. You go to the website, okay? It's very strange. He has all these links to it. The website is the MauraMurrayMystery.com. And it has a picture of her and you pull it up and it has all this stuff. And then there's just one little tiny post and it says all good things, dot, dot, dot. It was posted on June 7th of 2022 by James Renner. And it says this: I've decided to take a break from covering the Maura Murray case and the stories of all the ancillary victims at this time. Thank you so much for following my writing over the years. More stories and more cases to come. And that's it. And you can't click on anything on the website.
No, you can't, which is weird.
It's so freaking strange. And at first, yep, I thought that, okay, maybe it's just my laptop and my laptop's a piece of crap. So I had a couple people look, and sure enough, it's the same thing. Like, it doesn't say anything. It's so strange. However, he does still tweet things about her. And some things are useful. I will say that. Like, he's not stupid.
No, he's done his research for sure. No,
he's done his research and he knows a lot. But sometimes you're just like, okay, James, you're going a little extreme here, buddy. Like, let's just tone it down a little bit. I don't think that theory stands. Why would she be in Canada? I don't think she's going to run away from something as small as a credit card case. Like, I just don't.
Her probation was basically over.
Exactly.
Right.
It's over in a week.
Yes, she did have the accident. And like, I do get that. But like, I still just don't think she was at that place in her life.
But
like,
she got out of the accident. She got out of it. She didn't even get arrested. She didn't even get cited for alcohol or anything. There wasn't a moment where they picked her up and she was like trashed, or if she was, they didn't report it. And that would have come back against her on her probation.
That's weird too. And that's what makes it weird. It doesn't add up. Shit just doesn't add up.
I get that he is like spoken to a lot of people directly involved.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I get that. Like, maybe he has more information than we do. Of course.
Right. Of course.
And he does still follow us on Twitter, by the way.
Son of a bitch. Oh, James.
But also, I feel like it's a very specific theory that he is locked onto.
Yes, and won't let it go.
And won't let it go. And that's totally fine, but I don't necessarily agree.
I think it's the right one.
Why?
Yeah.
Canada.
And stop pushing it too.
Oh, he is, Quinny. He shut his website down.
I know. That's
just
weird.
To be like, And yeah, so that makes me think too, that maybe the book is going into some sort of production or they sold the rights to someone or whatever. I will say that James Renner on True Crime Garage talking about Amy Mahalovic is 50% of the reason why Straight Up Evil exists, because
that's very true.
The work that he's done in the Amy Mahalovic case and in the Maura Murray case.
Yeah, like, he's boss when it comes to that.
It's like Michelle McNamara.
He's done the work. He has to know something that we don't know. If anybody has read that book, because now I'm like, well, I have to read it then.
Same.
Right. I'm just also sick of that too, though. Like, I'm so fed up and sick with that whole, oh, we have some information, but we're not going to tell you. Like, yeah. I'm so sick of that.
All right, okay. James, we don't know. Just let us not know. Like, just let us be here and not know. But it's hard. It is. Canada's hard to believe. It just is.
It is. And someone would have spotted her by now. Someone would have spotted her.
I just don't know if you're going to let your friends and family like sit here wallowing in 20 years worth of like what happened.
You're not that cool.
No. All right. We're on to theory three.
Here we go.
She was abducted. Okay. Quinny.
What her dad thinks. That's what her dad thinks.
So we are talking about 7 minutes, okay? Right at the beginning, let's talk about this. There were 7 minutes between when Butch Atwood talks to Maura and the first police officer arrives at the crash scene.
Right.
Can someone be abducted in 7 minutes?
Yes, 100%.
Is it possible?
Yes.
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 But this theory means that she has been abducted by someone, just a victim of opportunity within 7 minutes. That the timing of that is literally the lottery. Like, no. Or she was followed, has been followed. There's nothing of that anywhere.
Right. Okay, stalked, anything like that.
Or
right.
They could literally close to the freaking place.
She could be in the immediate vicinity.
Exactly.
Of where. Okay.
Other than that, like the 7 minutes is way too short of a window, dude.
So all these theories that I'm going to go through about being abducted would be within the 7 minute window. We obviously can't discount the idea that she crashed her car and ran and then got abducted somewhere else 30, 40 minutes after the whole thing, you know, like,
correct.
You can't discount that either, but that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is it possible that between the time that Butch Atwood would talk to her and the first cop got there, that she was abducted? So first, let's think about the dogs, right? The dogs came to the scene, sniffed the gloves, which her father says, well, she never wore those. Still, the dog sniffed the gloves, used that scent, tracked her 100 yards down the road. That leads a lot of people to think that she got 100 yards down the road and got into a car.
I read somewhere else that was like, okay, but like, could she just not have doubled back to the car?
So gone 100 yards down and went straight back. But then where?
Exactly.
That's a good point, though. I like that.
You know what I mean?
So we got to talk about the A-frame house.
All the way to the top.
So the A-frame house. Okay. This is less than a mile away from where Morris' car is found. There's a little A-frame house. Okay.
It's the old house, right? The beat up house, the beat up barn looking house, right?
Immediate vicinity of where she was. There are a lot of people who think that Maura Murray was killed there because there is a story that blood was found in the upstairs closet of this house. The family hired a private investigator. They contacted the owners of the house and the owners of the house let them search the house. This is in 2006. This is 2 years after the disappearance. They're like, sure.
Right.
Absolutely. Search it. Do whatever you got to do. Nothing to hide. Cadaver dogs are brought into the house and they hit on human remains in that closet. So the private investigator says that he took the sample from the closet, ripped up the carpet, brought it to the New Hampshire State Police, and the police did nothing with it. Or if they did, they have never said anything to us in the public about doing anything with it for the ensuing 16
years. It's infuriating.
And then there are a bunch of stories like this, and I don't even know which ones are true. There's ones that say that the carpet was disposed of and now it's just wood floor, but the wood floor has some blood in it that needs to be tested. In any event, the chain of command has obviously been broken because this evidence wasn't collected by the police. So the police probably can't use the evidence anyway. It's not good.
Or I don't know. Maybe they just keep stalling on it for some reason. Is anybody else getting the vibe that like, it's Quinny just like, it's been 20. I am.
It's been too long. It's been too damn long.
It is. It's 20 something years. Like, what are you doing? Like, get it off the shelf. What has you continuing to not solve this case?
Going back to the A-frame house, you didn't mention who resided in the A-frame house. The Rusty Knife Brothers.
Carly, you bring this back in for us. Fred got sent that knife. They sent Fred a rusty knife with blood on it.
Like, this is like movie shit. Like, this is really movie shit, though. Okay. But this, it ties everything back together because a man named Lawrence Moulton gave Fred the rusty knife that belonged to his brother, Claude. He and his girlfriend, Claude and his girlfriend were acting weird right after the disappearance of Maura. Several days after Fred gets the knife, Claude Moulton scraps his Volvo just for parts. And then, but to twist it more, other family members state that Lawrence made up the whole story just to possibly obtain the reward money. And he had a history of drug use. Fine. Okay. There still was literal human remains that were hit on by cadaver dogs in the closet of the A-frame house. Because Claude and the girlfriend lived in that house where the cadaver dogs were. And the blood was found in the closet. So either way, something nefarious went down. Fred goes to the sheriff's office to give the knife as evidence. And the dispatcher says, like, no one's available to take the evidence. Just no one's available right now to take this rusty, bloody stained knife. Okay. So Fred leaves and he mails the knife to the police department, Gypsy Rose style. And he gets confirmation that they receive it, but never any other response regarding the knife. So, like, did they just throw it in the trash? Is it on someone's vacation?
It just went into the box that is Mara's box.
Okay. Again, with that carpet sample, we'll never know.
Exactly. So, like, why is it really weird that the carpet sample from the A-frame house and the knife connected to the A-frame house both are not being tested?
Yep. I don't like it.
Convince me otherwise.
It's the simplest explanation. The house is right there.
Exactly.
Like, it's so...
We're talking horses, not zebras, people.
Horses, not zebras. We're talking horses. We're talking mustard, not ketchup, people.
I am so tired, Quinnies. Okay.
The Loon Mountain Three, town of Loon Mountain. These are a group of three brothers consistently referenced in Maura's disappearance. Their names are all online. I'm not telling you what their names are here. Okay, people.
Do your own work, man.
Do your own damn work. Many people believe that Maura could have been dating one of the three brothers and she was in the Haverhill area to see him specifically. Two of the brothers reportedly shared a home right near the crash site. Okay. So that's what leads people to think, again, A-frame house is right over here. These people's house is over here, close proximity. Who knows?
But why would she have the Vermont directions?
She's going to Vermont, people. There are also reports, okay, that all three of these brothers did not show up for work on February 9th, that their typical route to work was Route 112, where her vehicle was found.
Correct.
That's not the last time I'm going to say this either in this episode, that someone possibly would have been driving by.
But there's again,
Karen says somebody drove by. Karen says people drove by too while she was driving.
And that's all well and good and very possible. But this is a rural area. There's not 20 other roads to get from point A to point B.
Right. Totally true. Right. Totally valid point. These are county routes. There's nothing else.
Right.
You have to have a reason to turn down another one of these roads. Yes, for sure. So there's no concrete evidence whatsoever to support this claim, Krenice. And it's just one of those things. This is just what people bring up. They dig up people's names, put them on the internet. So we know that there were three guys that didn't go to work that day.
Cool.
You know, like, I don't know. We got nothing. The tandem driver, Quinny's.
Oh, God.
So just like Carly was talking about when we were talking about the track coach or teacher, Haas. We'll call him Haas. Is it possible that she was on her way to somewhere with someone? Two separate cars, someone's driving in tandem with her, her car stalls, or she crashes into a snowbank or what have you. She gets out, gets in the car with the other driver 100 feet down the road.
And laters
and ends up possibly murdered. Is that possible? Do we have anything at all pointing to the presence of another car, because I don't think we do. No. We don't have Butch Atwood talking about another car. Faith Westerman isn't talking about another car.
But again, there's no cell phone reception, so she couldn't have called or texted that person from the cell phone. Right.
No, so they had to have seen her. Right. And then in the photos of her vehicle, they had to have seen her crash, basically. And then in the photos of her vehicle, you can see the gas gauge is almost entirely full, just like you said the last episode. Just seeing it on the dashboard, I was like, wow, oh my God. Like,
yeah,
someone just saw her at a gas station. Like, right. Within not long at all. I just feel like you would have seen her and another individual together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, I have to believe that, especially just on her route from Amherst, if there was a viable gas station, someone would have looked into to where she was just before then and found out she was with someone. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just...
Because on all the other footage that we have, she's alone.
She's alone. The ATM, she's alone. You know what I mean? Like the liquor store, she's alone. Yep.
Yep.
Weirdly, you know, we got into a lot of stuff about trafficking with Breonna Maitland. That doesn't really come up in Marmari theories as much at all. People do not lean that way. And I don't know why. It can happen to literally anyone. Any time.
Exactly.
And so
it's a real thing.
But that doesn't come up. But we are now going to go hard into theory number 4. Was it a serial killer?
This was hard because I don't want to get too much into Israel Keyes, because I know you're going to cover all of that.
Jocelyn. Okay. Listen, we can never do an episode like this again. Okay. Because I'm all the way back in Keyes country.
I know.
From fucking 2 years ago.
He ties into this.
You're going to be writing a book. Called Not True good. Crime Addict, and it's going to be about you and Israel.
True Crime Addict, my unhealthy relationship with... No.
But
Israel Keyes is alive and living in Canada.
No.
That's not fair.
But this theory isn't only about Israel Keyes. There are people who think, just in general, a serial killer got more between, like we said, the alleged 7 minutes between Butch Atwood seeing her and she just completely disappearing. This would mean, again, a random serial killer happened upon her in this rural area of New Hampshire in the middle of the night, like not even the middle of the night, evening, just happened to be there.
Yeah.
And I know, like, what's the status, like the statistics that, like, you probably cross paths with a serial killer, like
a lot more than
like
a lot of times.
You do. And it could very easily mean that Maura got willingly into a stranger's car in the middle of nowhere at night after Butch Atwood, who is a seemingly, as far as we know, nice stranger, offering her help.
And she refused help from him.
And she refuses help from him.
Right.
So why would she go into some rando's car? There is some speculation that she was possibly stalked beforehand, either by Keyes or the Colonial Parkway killer that we'll talk about later, which is another line, but we'll see. But specifically Israel Keyes, because like Joss will get to later, he bragged to police that some of his alleged murders were ruled as accidents by
his accidents. Okay. Yes, he did.
Did he stage the car accident? Okay. Was the accident itself true? And then everything else staged to look like she disappeared, but really he took her.
Right. Okay? Because was it staged to, like, did someone run her off the road and cause it to look like an accident?
Oh, for sure.
He definitely ran people off of the road. Did that. Yeah.
And people do that a lot in general. Grab people to traffic to whatever.
And there's a lot of cases that have that weird car accident, like Maitland's and others.
Yes.
And many others.
That is a very common thing that we bring up. And like, so some people believe she got into a car, serial killer took her to a second location, killed her, we'll never find her. Okay. Second location part speaks to me. I feel that, like, that makes sense if that's what you're going with. Okay. Cause there's obviously no direct evidence at the scene, but again, it's either the best serial killer lottery opportunity ever, or you're telling me that they stalked her the entire way without anyone noticing, without Maura noticing, and like sending a text at the gas station when there is cell service. There's nobody nefariously looking, like, weirdly stalking her at the gas station on their cameras.
I just don't know.
It's
granted,
tough.
We'll talk about, like I said, we'll talk about Israel Keyes with Joss later, but like, I wouldn't put it past Israel Keyes.
No.
At all.
He's a total opportunist.
Absolutely.
He'd just take advantage of any situation he could.
But like, that's like way too.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Way too perfect. And I just feel like there are better suspects than that.
Yes, I totally agree. Let's talk about Israel Keyes. Just real quick. Oh, I promise God. I will keep it brief, Quinnies. Okay. I know I'm a broken record with this. I really am because
he could have done all the things.
Because I just think of him all the time.
No.
And I just am like, wow, we'll never know. And the bastard made it so that we will never know. And it just drives me insane. Also, FYI, the Stewarts, where someone used Suzanne Lyle's debit card on Central Avenue, is being torn down right now.
Wow.
I get such a bad feeling.
I don't love that.
Such a bad feeling. It's just
weird.
Yeah. I mean, I know they're like they're tearing down them like all around the area.
All of them.
Get the new ones up, but like, I don't.
I'm not crazy about that. Yeah, that's weird.
Don't like it. He couldn't have been everywhere all at once. And he's not like a mastermind, super smart person. Like he's not,
he got caught.
He kept a good face on for a while, but eventually, just like all of the rest of them, it slips off and that's it. He could not have been everywhere all the time, but we do have to consider a couple things about Maura Murray. First one, Carly already said, when he was in federal custody, he bragged that some of his murders had been ruled accidents by law enforcement. Okay. So this could suggest the staging of the car, et cetera, all of that. Notice, you could say the same thing about Breonna Maitland.
You could say the same thing about a lot.
So next one, he was traveling the week that she disappeared. He rented a Volkswagen Jetta in Utah. He was not supposed to leave the state, never stopped him before. He put 500 miles on the vehicle. So he could not have been in New Hampshire by car, but he could have driven to an airport and used another name to fly. When he murdered the couriers, Bill and Lorraine Courier in Essex, Vermont, that time he drove a rental car to Vermont, drove it back up to Maine to visit his brother, and then drove to O'Hare to fly home.
Yeah.
To Chicago.
Oh, so he was just all around that area. So like just all.
Yes. Probably not. He probably wasn't in the area, but we can't rule out.
You can't completely out. You can't completely rule him out at all. You can't.
And then he absolutely was in New Hampshire in October of 2004. This is 8 months after Maura disappeared. And he was in Manchester, which is 2 hours from where Maura disappeared and 3 hours from where Breonna Maitland disappeared. What the fuck is he doing here? What's he doing?
I feel like there needs to be like a pin.
Where was
in the triangle of like, and it's going to end up being like a Satan's fault lines. Like it's going to be like,
yeah. So Israel Keyes was a tall, slender built man with long brown hair who smoked cigarettes. This matches the eyewitness description of the man that's seen with Maura Murray when she crashed. And because he had long hair, he could have been mistaken for a woman. So that's also kind of adds to the creep factor here, because that when she goes back on it and says, oh, well, I don't really know if it was a man, what made you think it was? And then what made you think it wasn't? You know, just got to ask yourself that question.
Either way, there is no question that it's a cigarette.
The cigarette is maintained. And he was, you know, he like was giving Samantha Koenig cigarettes before he killed her. You know what I mean? Yep. Like he was not good. Ugh, just gross. While it is improbable that it was Israel Keyes, we know him to always travel with a police scanner. So he would be able to tell if there was going to be a police presence somewhere. If someone was getting dispatched out there, it does stand to reason that he could hear it over the scanner and go in that direction, possibly before the police got there. But that would be such a tiny window of time and opportunity. And it's risky as fuck. But he did, and he did risky stuff, but not that risky, at least not until he got caught. I don't think that Israel Keyes had anything to do with Maura Murray's disappearance. However, I do think, and this is just my personal theory, after revisiting True Crime Bullshit with Josh Hallmark and the Keyes episode of the Missing Maura Murray podcast, his attention was drawn to this area when Maura Murray disappeared because it became a national cause for concern. I think he got interested in the case. And I personally believe that there is a high likelihood that he went there after she disappeared and probably killed Breonna Maitland.
Ooh.
And I say this because Josh from True Crime Bullshit tracked his home in Constable, New York, and his parents' home in Smyrna, Maine. and you drive directly past the Black Lantern Inn and where her car was found.
Wow. Interesting, Quinny.
Did we just crack the case?
I think they did. I think True Crime Bullshit did. Probably did. That's they probably
true.
Did.
That's true. That's
they
true.
Also have in FBI files someone saying they saw Israel Keyes in the weeks leading up to Breonna Maitland's disappearance near the diner where she worked. The day server shift that she had, the breakfast shift that she had, that place. Yeah.
What if we know, right?
Because when he murdered Samantha Koenig, he's hanging out at the coffee shop. He's sitting in his car watching her. I mean, he does this shit. What about Suzanne Lyle? Same deal.
What if he stole a cop car to do it? What if he stole a cop car to do it?
Quinny, there's a million things
he could have done.
This is why I hate this guy so much, because it's just like, I can't say definitely not. Right. So I will say that
this case is crazy.
I know that Maura Murray's case and Breonna Maitland's case are super similar, but really after looking into it, it's way more likely for Breonna than it is for Maura. And either way, he was in New Hampshire right after that. So whether he has anything to do with her disappearance, I think personally, probably not, but I think we know he was looking up missing persons and he liked following these cases, you know? And I think it got him interested. I really do. So just hang on to your hat for the next time I have to bring him up in another unsolved case that we have. Carly, I'm just trying to see your shirt.
Be a nice human.
Be a nice human.
Can you please try?
Okay, and now we're on to the Colonial Parkway killer, Carly.
I did not know about this like at all.
Yeah, True Crime Garage has a good couple episodes on it.
So the Colonial Parkway murders, this is where at least 8 people were killed along the Colonial Parkway of Virginia between 1986 and 1989. There were 3 couples that were murdered and 1 couple is missing and presumed to be dead. So the linking of the 4 crimes is actually circumstantial and like no suspects have actually been publicly identified, but like
they're similar.
They're very similar. Like, come on. The first 2 victims were Kathleen Thomas, 27, and Rebecca Ann Dowski, who's 21. Their bodies were found on October 12, 1986, inside Kathleen's Honda Civic. They had rope burns on their necks and their wrists. Their throats were slashed, and diesel fuel was poured over their bodies and the car, but the car did not ignite. Kathleen was like her throat was slashed so bad she was nearly decapitated. But both women were fully clothed. No evidence of robbery or sexual assault. September 20th, 1987, David Nobling, who was 20, and Robin Edwards, who was 14, were shot to death in the Ragged Island Wildlife Refuge near Smithfield, Virginia. The Ford Ranger truck, David's Ford Ranger truck, was found at the parking area there, but their bodies were both found along the water's edge of the James River. April 10, 1988, 18-year-old Cassandra Lee Haley and 20-year-old Richard Keith Hall went missing after going to a party at Christopher Newport University, which was their first date together. Stop going to parties. Okay. Richard's Toyota Celica was found at the York River Overlook, and there was some clothing inside, but their bodies have never been found, and they're both presumed to be dead.
Don't go in a car. Ever.
Stop going in the car.
Stop leaving your house. September 5th, 1989, Anna Maria Phelps, who was 18, and Daniel Lauer, who was 21, went missing on their way to Virginia Beach. Jesus. Anna Maria was dating Daniel's brother at the time they were missing, but her car, a Chevy Nova, which is one that my dad used to own. Love it. Was found abandoned at the I-64 New Kent rest stop and was heading the wrong direction. On October 19, 1989, their skeletonized bodies were found in a wooded area by hunters along the interstate about a mile from the rest stop. And one of the bodies appeared to have suffered knife wounds. I don't know. I have a hard time connecting this to Maura.
Yeah.
Because first of all, like the timing is much earlier than her. These were all couples.
Right.
That were allegedly linked.
It's like they're reaching.
It is. And like their deaths. And the two presumed to be dead are significantly different than what is presumed to have happened to Maura, because we don't have a body. The car was not lit in diesel fuel and tried to like light on fire, whatever. But the fact that there was a car abandoned, rural area, stuff was still found in the car, no robbery of any kind.
Mm-hmm. No signs of struggle. And if she was with another person, it could very well have been a couple.
Correct.
We just don't know who the other one is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And honestly, just because all these couples were similarly alleged, like presumed killed, they're just coupling those ones and labeling it as a potential this serial killer. Like, we're not even taking into consideration single deaths that may have occurred in that area. And granted, like Virginia and New Hampshire are not the same, but the ruralness of it is very similar.
And because the person has never been identified.
Right.
Everyone's
identified.
It makes everyone ask, you know, could it possibly be? Whew.
Right. Yeah.
Oh God. Okay. Jesus. Okay. So we got it. All right. Queenies, we've been pretty out there with some of this. All right. It's been, you know, we've been big picture thinking. Now we got to bring it down a little.
It's like, let's reel it back in. We got to reel it
back in, and we got to revisit just a couple, two, three people.
Before we reel it in, we have not mentioned aliens as potential.
Oh.
Aliens has not been brought up in a while.
Alien abduction could happen.
High potential.
Middle of the road, her scent just disappears.
7
high
minutes.
High potential. Beamed up.
She's gone. Boom. UFO down. Gets her. Done. Boom, done. Boom town. She's an alien.
Just saying.
Dropped her in Canada. No, maybe. High possibility. I mean, just because of how weird the whole shit is.
It is.
And I feel like alien everything is always like
clean disappearance, like just poof.
Gone.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oof, be gone.
Okay. Now we're reeling it in.
Just reeling it in. Okay. We're going to revisit 3 key players in this story who deserve re-mentioning. So the first is Butch Atwood.
Yes.
And so Carly, if you'll remember, Butch is the one who saw the car crash, came running, tried to talk to Maura.
Good old Butch.
Said, no, I already called AAA. And he was like, well, I know that you didn't because you don't have any service, but okay.
Now,
and apparently she said also that please don't call the cops.
Right.
That as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But of course that is, you know, everything is allegedly.
Everything.
Right? Okay.
Exactly.
So.
And Butch Atwood has since deceased. So.
Right.
Now we'll never
know. We don't know.
Okay. Yep. We'll never know. But at the time he was very open to just talking. He is allegedly the last person to see Maura alive. And there's always something to that. He has a bus. He sees Maura on the side of the road. He talks to her, like we said, like, can I call the cops? She says, no, I already called AAA. We know she's on probation. So her not wanting the cops involved is not insane to me.
There's alcohol. She's drinking. Yeah. So she also doesn't want them there because of that.
Of course.
Right.
Exactly. So like, that's not out of the question by any means. But he did offer, like I said, he offered to call the cops. She says, no, he offered to help her and say like, do you want to come back to my house? It's right over there. I live with my wife and my elderly mother. At first thought, you're like, okay, well, he's trying to make her feel more comfortable by saying like, it's not like you coming back to me, my creepy old house, like just me. You're a young woman and I'm like this old dude. I still wouldn't probably do it.
Hell no.
You know what I mean?
No,
like, regardless.
Absolutely not.
I have 30 I'd be like, Labradors I'm cool. back at I'm my cool, house.
Dude. Especially if I run cross country, I would be like, oh, I can, I'll jog to the next destination. Thank you very much.
Like, exactly.
I'd be like, listen, Butchie Poo, I appreciate it, bro, but I ain't going with you.
But people really stick to him because, you know, he called the police right away. Then there was that weird thing about when they contacted him afterward and he hadn't, quote, known that she wasn't there at the scene because he just called them to help her. The police tell him that she's not there. He's like, what do you mean? Oh, let me go run up to my Bronco and just like, oh, let me help you search. Some people think like you're really too
gung-ho.
You're too gung-ho.
Right.
It's weird because we know that people will insert themselves close to the scene of the crime and the investigation.
Right. Yes. If people are weird
with it. Okay.
Yes. And they do this. Yeah.
It also lends to the fact that the timeline that, again, we're going off of allegedly between when he allegedly last spoke to and saw Maura and he goes back to his house, calls the police and the police arrive. the likelihood of him actually committing any sort of crime is very, very high.
Definitely.
He knows the area. He lives right there.
Right.
The time is on his side at this point because he's very well familiar with everything. Keep in mind that he is like an older dude. He is clinically obese. He has health problems. He has possibly breathing problems. Like, he's not in the best shape. And Maura certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
So like, could he really, even if she was intoxicated, the likelihood that
of him getting her,
she not being able to fight him off because she went to West Point. She knows how to defend herself. Okay. And she's strong, and or just get away and run away. But then he's brought in and he has to take two lie detector tests.
Butchie poo.
I love it. And I know they're not 100% accurate.
No.
Well, they're not admissible in court, but he took two and he failed the first one. Why'd you fail? Why'd you fail?
Well, he was probably a little nervous, probably.
And
for sure.
Medical conditions,
medications he's taking. But one of them is wrong and one of them is right.
Yeah. We've gotten no further.
Don't love it. Okay. Then there's the fact that there's a little bit of stipulation and speculation regarding what he originally said versus what he maybe later said versus what Officer Cecil Smith says he said. Originally, Butch says when he saw Maura, she appears to be intoxicated. She appears to have been drinking. She's leaning. She's slurring her words. Okay. And this is what Officer Cecil Smith stated that Butch told him specifically when he asked about when he last saw Maura. But later, Butch takes it back, essentially, or just says, nah, I didn't say that, because it's published in the Caledonia Record that he quoted, no, Maura didn't appear to be intoxicated, despite what police have said of a witness indicated that she had appeared to be impaired due to drinking.
Yeah, I don't know.
Something ain't clean.
I don't love in any capacity when someone's story changes. And I know that people are not the best witnesses. Memories fail.
But why isn't the story still consistently the same? Why isn't the story consistently the same?
Don't like it. Then there was a question that he possibly lied about being a cop. Did he, though? Did the reporter just get it wrong? Was there just a miscommunication?
That's hard to tell.
We really don't know. Or maybe was he just trying to seem like he knew more than he did? Was he trying to maybe get information from the media because he's invested in the case because he was right there and part of it?
Right. He obviously knows that like there's a family attached to this person who's hoping that they will come home. So he's also being like, you know, proactive, let's say.
Right.
Or could be. It's weird.
I don't know.
It's weird.
But
I will say that the one thing that really is a little odd to me is that, again, it's for me, it all boils down to the fucking dogs, dude. It boils down to the
the
dogs.
Okay?
Yep.
In this specific theory, okay, because I'll talk more about the dogs even later, okay? I'm like all about them. But in this specific theory, again, the dogs trace her scent to the middle of the road. The way that she's going is very close to and nearby Butch's home. He knows she's there. He has time on his side, like we said. Could it mean nothing that she happens to be near his home because there's nothing else around? Maybe. Mm. I don't know, dude. It's like,
I don't know. I just don't think it's Butch. I don't think it's Bushy Butch.
I think that maybe he was like trying to be a good Samaritan, but like was being a little weird.
I think he's just a strange dude that was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, there's a couple of those. Damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
And many of these are we going to allow to exist before we're like, no, I have a problem with the way that you handled that. He strikes me as just kind of a fuddy-dud old guy that's maybe speaking out of turn or saying things that he can't really speak to because he wants to be helpful and it's making him look pretty bad.
Exactly.
I think that's
exactly
possible.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's very possible.
But he doesn't do himself any favors. But it's worth mentioning because there are plenty of people who think he's the last one to see her alive. He's the one you gotta look at. And then we're on to Rick Forcier.
Forcier.
Rick Forcier. Okay, let's talk about him.
Enrique Forsyth.
Enrique Forsyth. He is the man who reported he saw a woman matching Maura's description jogging along Route 112 on the night she disappeared. So this is about 4 or 5 miles from the accident site. But Rick, Enrique, he lived in a trailer across the road from Butch Atwood.
Hers doesn't like Ricky.
Hers doesn't like that. Has an opinion about it.
Hers heard that he was very close to Butch Atwood's home, and hers did not like it.
So, okay, they're neighbors, Butch and Enrique, okay? And when law enforcement tried to search his trailer, he refused initially.
What are you hiding there?
And then later, he consented and nothing was recovered. Make matters worse, Rick Forsyth is an oddball. And I am being quite polite in the way that I am putting that. He is an oddball, bit of an oddball. He reportedly joked to investigators that Maura was living with him and that she's, quote, a good cook.
Gross.
I don't like
that. I don't like it.
Let's leave the jokes out of this conversation, sir.
Read the room.
Seriously.
There's also a former New Hampshire State Police officer who was dismissed for behavioral concerns, by the way. He says that Rick Forsyth was the prime suspect in the disappearance of Maura Murray from the beginning, and that a lack of evidence just made it impossible to arrest him. Then we have his ex-wife, Rebecca, saying that before Maura disappeared, he would joke about, quote, throwing a body in a lake and weighing it down with concrete.
Yeah, I don't like it.
That joke sucks. So don't tell it. People do this. Like, this is many a body have been found
absolutely
in a similar state. Not cool. Don't joke about it. Not funny. Not enjoyable. So he can't be ruled out. The problem with Rick Forsyth is that we can't get an alibi for him. We don't know where he was. We don't know what, if any, his connection is to this case. Did he really even see Maura? We have no idea.
Is he just a crazy lying liar face?
Is he just a weird ass dude who happened to live right by where this happened and started talking to the cameras? We don't know.
What is the fucking case where he's a weirdo, he's a classmate of the victim, and his apartment was like right there, and he immediately comes and talks to the police. And
Lauren Giddings.
Thank you.
Lauren Giddings. Yeah, she was a law student. She was going places. He was,
right?
That's a rough one. That's a good one to cover. He's a piece of shit. Yeah, it's true. Some people just come right out and insert themselves. And those two girls in England, Carly. Like the most famous English child murder, whatever.
Yeah.
He was there. He worked at the school or something. And he was giving interviews too. It's just,
go to school. Don't talk to people.
I think we talked about them on the Madeline McCann episode or something. But don't go to school. But okay. So we can't rule him out. And, you know, if you look at Jacob Wetterling, who we will definitely cover, right? 27 years it took to find that offender. And he was like around on the night in question and nothing for damn near 30 years. So you just can't really rule out Rick. Quinny is going to get into Karen McNamara and then we're going to talk final thoughts.
I feel like Karen is a credible witness. First of all, Karen McNamara, apparently on that night, the night of the accident, the night that Maura went missing, Karen worked as... She was actually a drug abuse counselor, and she worked in outpatient for Friendship House in Woodsville. And when she left that night from work, she actually, the very first thing she did was call home to let them know that she was on her way, because she crosses Route 112 and there's no cell service and there's a lot of woods, deep woods, she says. And so she usually leaves a message. And this particular night, she had a cancellation. So she was actually leaving work early, like her patient had canceled. And so she was leaving around 7:15 p.m. She was going up the road past the hospital, which she believed was Swiftwater Road. And all of a sudden she saw police lights behind her, and a police car comes flying up behind her with his lights on, and he passes her. It was car 001. And she like saw that like on, and it was an SUV and like a suburban type SUV. And she sees the number 001 on it as he passes and he speeds by. So Karen says that she goes down Goose Lane and she comes out onto Route 112, and she's going to take a right onto Route 112. And there's like a little store there, apparently. All of a sudden, the same SUV, car 001, goes flying past her, and he's flying past her down Route 112, which she is about to take a right on. So he's now passed her two times. And in her head, like according to herself, and this, I got this when in an interview that she did in 2017, like she said immediately she felt like it was already weird that this same 001 SUV passed her twice in that short of a time. And she found it to be suspicious. She keeps driving. She takes her right. She keeps driving. And when she gets down that road over some hills, she gets down to the corner that's by the weathered barn and like by Butch's house. And she sees the same SUV, 001, and it's pulled over on the wrong side of the road, and it's turned facing, its headlights facing nose to nose with a black, with another vehicle, which was a dark colored sedan. And she said, when Karen actually saw the sedan, it didn't even actually look like it had been wrecked to her necessarily. It looked like it had, it was just parked on the wrong side of the road. And here's that SUV that she saw speed in front of her. She passes them and she says she pulls over to the side right in front of Butch's house. And she says she got this instinctual feeling. And she said she looked over her shoulder and like she sat there and she thought about it for a minute. And she had this instinctual feeling. And she was like, she realized there was no cell service. She didn't have cell service. She realized, well, the cop is, a police officer is already there. She said she didn't think that it looked like a really bad accident. And she said she also didn't notice anyone in the cars. She says she cannot be 100% sure that they were not in the cars, but she did not notice anyone in either vehicle. Okay. Now this, she said she was leaving around 7:15. And when she pulled up to the accident, it was somewhere around 7:30 something. Okay. And it was 7:42 when Cecil arrived on scene. So this car, this apparent 001, managed to be there in that small little time frame and then gone all of a sudden. Okay. And get this even further, I find out. Does Karen tell us? She even had a conversation on the phone with her dad near Beaver Pond, okay? And they talked and made jokes about the him being 001. She's like, ha ha, because we're such a small town. We only have one cop, so it's 001, right? And that's how she remembered that it was that number, right? Now, she knew this case about Mara had been going on through the news, and they said, even if you didn't see anything, but you know something, we want you to call us, the Haverhill Police Department, right? So she calls them. And she tells them 001, and he was there on the scene and he was pointed to the car, right? And they're like, are you sure that 001 was there? This is what the Haverhill Police Department says to her. And Karen's like, yes, I'm sure. I'm sure it was 001. I'm positive. Are you sure? They say, she said they asked her twice. And she said, yes, I'm sure, sir. Like, I promise you that's, they were there. They're on the phone with her. They asked her a bunch of questions for like about a half hour or so, she says. She gets off the phone with them, okay? They call her back, the Haverhill Police Department, and they ask her again, are you sure that that car was 001? Why were they asking her this? 001 was out of service that night and wasn't being used that night. That particular SUV was not on service that night.
Not good.
No, it ain't good. Quinnies. And Reddit put me down a whole rabbit hole. And it says for you not to believe too much of what Reddit says. But I'll tell you what, looking, taking her interview and some of the shit I found on Reddit, this shit ain't clean. It's not clean, Gwynnies, no. And I don't like it. This is an innocent bystander who was just on her way home from work, driving the same route she drives every single day. And this incident came upon her.
Yes.
Like, she's not trying to wedge herself into anything. And exactly, why is she going to lie? And she says that her biggest regret is that she feels that she should have listened to her gut instinct that told her that something wasn't right when she pulled up. But she chose not to get out because the cops were there and she felt like you should be able to trust the police.
You should be able to.
And so she went against her own instinct and she regrets it to this day because she feels maybe she would have seen further into something that could have saved Mara. Why was that police car there? I believe her. I believe that it was there. And it is my strongest theory that I have.
Her story has not changed.
And she remained anonymous for like 6 or 7 years before she finally came out to the public and gave out her whole name, Karen. She wouldn't even release her name. So, and like, she didn't want publicity for this. Yeah,
exactly.
Nothing really came of that. They never came out with any more information about it. They still claim that 001 was out of service and there's no further information released on any of that.
Has James spoken to her and what is his thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to know, James Renner.
Yeah.
If you've talked to Karen, we would really appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
Seriously, because she'll have something real, real interesting to tell you. Also, something else I want to mention just really quickly that kind of pisses me off and rubs me the wrong way about this too, is that in early 2021, the tree at the site where Murray was last seen, which had been marked with a blue ribbon as a memorial, was actually cut down by the property owner. And shortly thereafter, a request from Murray's family requested to have a New Hampshire historical marker placed at the site for her. And they had submitted this in late of 2020. It was actually turned down by the New Hampshire Division of Historical Research. We see time and time again, so many little families just asking for one look. Could you just give us this little memorial? Because our body's never been found. We've never been able to figure it out. So could you please just maybe have the decency.
Right.
And it makes me so bitter.
This is refusing to honor these victims after they are gone. The property owner, I mean, just total dick move by the property owner. But
seriously.
But the landmark, make it a landmark. Let people know that this is where that happened. Yeah.
Yes. Remind people, you know, we already don't have enough information of our victims as it is.
Exactly.
The least you could do is give them a freaking memorial for their family and their friends who mourn the loss of them every single day and live in a mystery of
theories.
And,
don't have any answers.
No.
Right.
No. Just one more thing to drop on you, Quinnies, before we get into final thoughts. Mara's ex-boyfriend, Bill, was indicted in 2019 for an alleged sexual abuse incident that happened in 2011 when this victim very bravely came forward and testified to the unwanted sexual advance from Bill. A bunch of other women came forward and said, I never liked the way he spoke to me in the office, and he is condescending and demeaning towards women. Someone said, isn't that the guy who used to date Maura Murray? And then the media just like ran with it.
You
see a lot more now about him and about his potential involvement or lack of involvement, or was he ever properly questioned? All, you know, all the things. So that just deserves mentioning because we know that especially over the last couple of years, people have returned to him as a possible source of something. Maybe we don't know her.
Mm-hmm.
He was her boyfriend, so we don't know.
What happened
to Maura Murray? Final thoughts.
Mine are pretty quick and straightforward. The very first thing I said is in my notes is just exactly from what I was just talking about the memorial. These people have lost everything. They've lost their daughter. They have lost justice. Give them something in all of this. Do we have like a car crashing serial killer killer on the loose that has been doing this for 35 plus years.
For real.
And he's still doing it. These things happen all the time, and weird things like this happen all the time. And also, like, there could be someone that knows how to make someone drive off the road, whether they've had a couple drinks or not. Like, if they've been bumped a little bit or hit or sideswiped or even hit from behind, like, something can go really haywire with their car completely out of their control. Like, that's a real thing. So I get those vibes a lot. Like, that, like, there can be people out there that actually cause women to crash their cars.
This did not happen to Diane Downs. So I just need to say, put that right back out there.
This did not happen to Diane Downs. She's shot her kids. Okay. And that's what happened.
Right. For sure. My last and final thought about it is just, why is it yet another case where I feel like it's a cover up? And why is it again another cold case that is put up on a high shelf that everybody just wants to keep pushing it aside and pushing it aside? And why is it being put on the back burner?
Yep.
Who is hiding it? Those are my final thoughts on it. Yeah, thanks for giving me Karen, because that sure as shit put me right down a rabbit hole. And I believe her. I believe her. And and I don't believe very many witnesses in these cases. I really
don't. She's compelling. She is compelling.
Very. She is.
Tell you what, I do not like that the car is locked. Something about the car being locked.
It's sketch.
Tells it's, me.
Yeah.
Someone You're had so the right. foresight oh to do really that.
Are. Or
were Brianna Maitland's doors locked?
I'm gonna double check.
Look it up. I need to look it up.
When you say someone had foresight, do you mean, who do you mean?
Like somebody else did it. Either an offender
or Maura herself.
Okay, right. Because I think.
It's intentional. You do not intend
Maura, who locked it, thinking she was coming back to the car at some point.
But was it someone that did that to make it look that way?
There's a million possibilities.
But would you not, if that's your nefarious thinking, would you not like want to stage more of a scene versus the opposite?
Right. That's what I'm saying. The offender would lock the doors to make you think that she locked the doors because she left willingly, when really he just locked the doors, made it look like an accident, locked the doors, made it look like she left willingly.
But if she goes into the cop car 001, she's thinking she's going to get back to it at some point. And she doesn't want all of her belongings to be taken.
Oh, something ain't clean, Quinny. Something ain't clean.
I can't find the exact answer to whether Brianna Maitland's car was locked, but I'm going to find out.
Okay.
Because it was crashed. Because it was also crashed. Were they actual real crashes, or was the car moved and staged?
Especially Brianna's. Yeah, for sure. It just requires so much planning and stealing the car and all of this.
This
requires all of this.
Still, something ain't clean.
There's some weight there for the whole 001 cop or imprisoning cop or what have you. Her scent being just poof in the middle of the road.
Fucking to weird. Me,
and again, like, this could be completely like a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. I do too much true crime. But the fact that Karen's statement about that, and they asking her so many times, and the fact that even if it means nothing, they wouldn't even look at the rusty knife. They wouldn't even do anything with it. And when they finally, someone gets in the freaking A-frame cabin and they find the dog hitting on the closet where blood and then possible remains or whatever.
Right.
And the carpet now sample is gone.
Right.
No, those things to me could easily mesh together. Is it the Moltons who did it and the cop covers it up? Is it the cop who did it who knows the Moltons who had her stash there for a minute to get back to her later? It's really interesting to me that their scent stops in the middle of the road. Okay. Regardless of whether she doubles back or not, there's no footprints. They mentioned there's specifically no footprints, hers or otherwise,
right.
near or around the snow of the car, but nobody ever says there was no weird tire tracks. Did anybody even look? Did anybody
care? No mention.
No mention.
Yeah, there is a serious lack of investigation okay. in this case, and it's infuriating.
Well, maybe they didn't share it, but so there could have easily been
two sets of tire tracks.
Two sets, either the right. tandem driver that some people believe, the 001 car, the tire tracks would fit the type of tire that the cops use, yep. okay, that they know that they didn't pull up on the scene that way, or the Moulton's car, if they had one. Horses, not zebras, people. I really feel either she is somehow lost in the woods and never to be found, and she just accidentally got in there somehow, or she got in someone's car that was a stranger, but someone who seemed to be
authority
right. and helpful right. of some kind, that isn't a random Butch Atwood helpful. Okay.
No, because she wouldn't take his help.
Exactly. That's what I feel. And that either, like I said, either they took her and like hit her in the Moultons or whatever. Maybe the Moultons had nothing to do with it. But the fact that they're not even going to look at that evidence, the two different sets of evidence that come to them in separate ways, and that it's connected to that same place, and they don't want to look into that. No, dude.
And I'm telling you, there's uh-uh. these communities, the directions in her car, Stowe, Vermont, Burlington, uh-huh. Vermont. These are 45 minutes from where Breonna Maitland disappeared. This is a skiing and snowmobiling community. There is not a whole hell of a lot happening up there in the winter. You know, you're not just going to see a beautiful woman on the side of the road. This is such a really scary crime of opportunity.
Yes.
It just smacks of opportunity. I just don't see someone following her. I uh-uh. just don't see her being targeted by a serial killer. I don't see her meeting someone else. I see her possibly meeting up with people who either ski, snowboard, snowmobile. Can't get past the fact that it was so close to Valentine's Day. Uh-huh. I wonder what that had to do with it, if anything, because she's supposed to be gone for the week, right? She tells her school. I don't know. Maybe she just needed to get away. I'm desperate to find out what Christmas was like in 2003 in the Murray household. Mm-hmm. I come back to that over and over again in this case. What could we have learned from Maura Murray about herself and her life and her interactions with her family on that holiday? I feel like if I could be a fly on the wall at that holiday, I could solve this case. I really do.
Right.
I feel right. like I could yeah. be like, you know what? She would never go to Canada, James. She would never run away from her family. She would never, like, she was too close to her family to abandon them. That, like, I would be able to establish that. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you know, we don't know right. where she was or who she was with or what any 21-year-old really
right. Because they all have secrets.
Because they all have secrets.
So
it's what like even their best friends
at West Point.
Right.
Because so seemingly that's when her behavior starts to get weird.
Change when her behavior started changing. Yes.
So no yes. one else. So West Point does not release any records of cadets until they're dead. Legally dead,
right.
declared dead.
But her family, who have publicly stated they feel that she's dead, still refuse to have her named legally dead. So
yes.
get those released.
Yes.
And why is that?
I don't know how you...
I mean, who wants to do that? Who yeah. wants to do that, right? Mm-hmm. But if they already are saying out loud that's how they feel, I don't know. It's just... Yeah. It's weird.
There's no doubt about it. It's weird. I just have a really hard mm-hmm. time believing that she is somewhere in the woods either, Quinnies. It's like Craig Freer. I just feel like at some point we would have found something, some trace, some sign that the woman is out there or was out there or anything.
A shoe, like anything.
Anything. But no, I think the truth of it is, Quinnies, that it is one of the greatest mysteries of our true crime generation. Absolutely. There are so many different ways you could go with it. A lot has been said about her. And I think that 85% of it is complete and total bullshit. I think she's been made out to be a lot of bad things. She's been made out to be a lot of good things. I don't really believe any of it.
No.
I mean, how many 21-year-olds really have a fully formed identity anyway? Like she was yeah. still becoming who she was going to be. The way that people twist and turn it and try to point to one thing, the truth is it's a without a trace disappearance and none of us know. Okay, so if you have any information on the disappearance of Maura Murray, you can either, if you're in New Hampshire, call 911 and tell them you have information and they will get you to the right people. You can call the state police toll free at 800-525-5555. You can also just call your local sheriff's department. Also, you can contact the New Hampshire Department of Justice. Their telephone number is 603-271-3658. You can also go to the Department of Justice website, which is business.nh.gov/cold case tips, and you can submit a tip online anonymously. That's all we got on Mara Murray, Quinnies.
It's a hell of a story.
It is. You could drive yourself literally nuts. You could. Yeah.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally nuts.
Whew.
All right.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.